The Bill McIntosh Show.
This gem of all the wonder of the western sky, the emblem of the brave and true to flag. Flag of the sea, flag of star, you scream out of the band so high. Every heart will sing upon it as all across the land we raise our voices far and near.
At Bill McIntosh Show, now on with Michael Letts. He is America's favorite law enforcement professional from the Palmetto State, if not the Confederacy or the entire America, United States of America. Hope you don't get offended if I say the word Confederacy, Michael.
History. It's history.
Exactly. I'm not supposed to say it. Yeah, go ahead.
In fact, with put it this way. With my family heritage being over 300 years in South Carolina, we were in the middle of that war, and yes, we fought for states' rights.
Let me ask you a question: Were your ancestors under PGT Beauregard at Fort Sumter, firing at Fort Sumter? Were they really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, so, you know, terrific. Were they going back? Was your family, were they landholders? Were they homestead
plantation holders.
Okay. So anyway, you know, it's funny. I happen to know somebody also famous from South Carolina named the family. I lived in the same neighborhood of Robert Small's descendants. This is the guy
that became. Small.
Yeah, I know his family in White Plains, New York. That's for another phone call. We got this will be a 2 hour. This will be a 2 hour interview. So we got to be careful. So this is the Bill McIntosh Show on now with Michael Letts. He's from Invest USA. He's the CEO and founder of Invest USA, which is a national grassroots nonprofit organization helping hundreds of communities provide thousands of bulletproof vests for their police forces through educational public relations sponsorship and fundraising programs. It's great to have you on the program, Michael. How are you today in sunny South Carolina?
It is sunny today. I'll tell you what, it's only supposed to be in mid-80s, but it says the real feel, you know, what it really feels like is the mid-90s. So,
of course,
point being is South Carolina's humidity, for which we are famous for, has now begun to kick in, and it's hot. It's sunny, but it's hot. No question about
man.
That.
I bet that. Now, my son, you know, he went to Paris Island. He became a Marine.
He went to Paris Island in the winter, not in the summer.
He began on April 9th, 2019. I know because around that time. I don't want to say specifically when, but he went in. I got a phone call, and I said, oh, no, he's in there, man. And he graduated in the end of June. The Crucible was – well, actually, no, ooh. July he graduated. The Crucible took place – like the last weekend in June. It was so hot, Michael, that one of the kids passed out, went into a coma.
I know that's typical. That is not unusual for South Carolina. It gets hot.
I mean,
you know,
unbelievable.
I understand why all the Yankees love to come down this way, but they do. But I say, well, if you want to get an experience of hell, the heat of hell, come on.
sure. You know, and sand fleas and the whole shebang. And
exactly.
So anyway, there was this incredible case of alleged racial profiling dealing with Georgia State troopers were stopped a bus. They were apprehending or detecting something strange because a bus of the Delaware women's lacrosse team. It was the Delaware State University women's lacrosse team, historically a black university of color, university of color. And so they conducted a stop and search. They saw the bus in the left-hand lane. Apparently it was against Florida traffic regulations. So what do? They stopped the bus. The bus is only – how high would that bus be? I don't know. Give me an estimate, Michael. You're in law enforcement.
That bus shouldn't have been more than 10 feet tall, 10 to 12 feet tall.
Tinted windows.
Correct. And, you know, and here's what's interesting about the scenario. Of course,
yeah.
The first problem we have, Bill, is mainstream media. reports it for its purposes, and its narrative purposes are to say that law enforcement are bad people, were racist, were you know, racial profile. Here's the facts of that particular case. Is we were Georgia Patrol was conducting a legal routine checkpoints, okay, for contraband. That particular road system is known, I-95 corridor, the I-20 corridor, and all are known for drugs being transported out of Florida up to New York, et cetera. So there was a routine checkpoint. They had just prior told not the same people, another bus. The drug dogs had gone nuts. They had searched the bus and had found contraband. Okay. This is just within that morning, within hours or less. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now this bus comes, same routine checkpoint. You raise a very valid point. First of all, the bus went as attendant. They had no idea it was on the bus. Okay. The bus was denied.
They had no idea what?
Who was on the bus.
Yeah.
The bus didn't have, you know, Delaware State University, a historical black college written on it. I mean, there was no way to know who was on that bus. They stopped the bus, had the dogs circle the exterior, which is common. The dogs, once again, began to go into their mode as if they had detected something. Wow. So they boarded the bus to inspect. Now, they didn't find anything. They issued no citations. You remember just hours before, they'd had probable cause. They had found something on a previous bus. Yeah. Just hours before. Didn't find anything. Were respectful. Said, you know, sorry for your inconvenience. Have on your way. Well, the fact that they were allowed on the bus, which is legal, they had probable cause because the dogs gave them the cause. You said, well, did the dogs get it wrong? I didn't ask the dog. I don't speak dog. But, I mean, obviously, one could conclude that perhaps they didn't get it right this time. But, you know, none of us ever get it 100%. They got a sniffer, but sometimes they get a fly in their sniffer, and it doesn't work very well. But they did, from a legal standpoint, they allowed law enforcement to have probable cause to search. They could have declined, but they allowed them to come on. And they ran the dog up and down. The dog didn't find anything on the inside. I'm sure they asked a few people, let me check inside. That's what they do. You have a right to say, no, you're not checking my bag without a warrant. You can exercise your constitutional rights, and they will be upheld and defended by people like myself. Right. But the fact of the matter is everything was done with an order. Before they even get back, so I get it. Somebody was mad that this had happened. So they call the university. The university calls the president's office. He probably, you know, you don't get to be a president, president of a university without having political connections. I'm sure he calls the AG's office. AG's office in Delaware calls Georgia, raising Cain, et cetera. I get it, but here's my point to your listeners and to the entire situation. We don't have all the facts yet. What was the reason for the checkpoint? What was the probable cause? Why? They're going to have to justify this. Trust me, Bill, if they didn't cross their T's and dot their I's, then I will be the first one to help pop them, okay?
Yeah.
But we're jumping to a conclusion that they're automatically guilty, they're automatically racist, which you remember there's an ulterior motive in doing. And the motive is they want to destroy local and state law enforcement so that they can institute it with a national police force. And so they've got the perfect script here. This southern states harassing racial profile, but the facts don't add up. They couldn't even know who was in the bus because of the tent. They couldn't have seen who was there. They had no idea it was from Delaware State University. They had probable cause because they had gotten contraband off a previous bus just hours before, less than hours before. So at this stage, I'm failing to grasp what procedure, protocol, or law was violated in the traffic stop and the traffic incident that occurred. Still grasping?
Right. So, yeah. Sure. And by the way, this is funny. One of the people that responded, speaking on behalf of Georgia law enforcement, was, I think, black. And he said, this is a, I mean, I all I see in these cases is blue. I right. And,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
For law enforcement. And there's something else I'll add. This is just kind of a little joke. The dog, I saw that picture of the dog. The dog was black. It was a Michael, it was a canine of color. I saw a picture of the dog. It was funny. I was like, just out of curiosity, you know, maybe it's a Labrador. I don't know.
White,
a foxhound. A pit bull. I don't know what they use. And it turned out to be a black dog. It looked like a black pit bull. It's funny.
Yeah, the Malamutes, they look very similar. And,
well, no, actually, yeah, it was. I don't think. Well, maybe it was, but it was black. It was definitely black, and it was so funny.
They're black. Those dogs are black. They're all Australian.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Sure. So anyway.
And not
so.
Cheap.
Oh yeah, they're used in the White House.
$30,000.
They're used in the White House as a Secret Service protection animal.
Right.
And,
you know, the funny part about this bill is if somebody wants satisfaction, we'll use that word, then fine. Because the black dog got it wrong, he will not get a doggy biscuit tonight. You know, I mean, if they want justice, we'll give them justice. He got it wrong this time. He doesn't get his dog bone. I mean,
no dog bone for the dog who's black. And it's just so funny on so many levels, but it's also, it should be embarrassing.
It is embarrassing.
For this university, because
it's embarrassing, I mean, from the whole standpoint. You saw what happened. We'll talk about that in a minute over the weekend with the mass shooting in Buffalo.
Sure.
They are desperately trying to divert attention from their failed policies. Talk about the Biden administration, those social leftists. And the best thing they can do is to create a racial divide and try to create the best venue for that is to say law enforcement needs to be replaced. We need to come steal your guns. We need to take your guns away, replace local and state law enforcement with federal. And so they're looking and grasping for any narrative that can help accomplish that goal. And so they're using this incident and others, and they should be ashamed of themselves.
By the way, this reminds me a little bit of the idea that in the South, because there's historically been issues related to reducing the franchise or restricting voting rights of people of color in the South, you know, they want to have a federal agency to be able to have purview over any state changes to voting regulations.
Right.
They want to be able to have the veto over that. And to me, it just looks like the same thing. They would love to have a veto over any policies or activities performed by national law enforcement. But I want to ask you specifically, you know, you've mentioned this before about the idea of a national police force, and that's what they want. Barack Obama famously said that, you know, he wanted to establish a national police force. But have you seen anything in the last 2 or 3 years to buttress that? Tell us about what you've seen. I'd like to know more about that.
Let me just tell you the most two recent things. First of all federal agencies seem to be very well coordinated now and working. We didn't used to have that before. There were always turf wars. I'm not just talking about state, local. I'm talking about even in the feds. I'm like, you don't come near my stuff because I'm a federal agency unto myself. You're a federal agency. We stay apart. Now they're all very well coordinated. We'll talk about that in just a second. But to give you the most recent example is the Capitol Police, U.S. Capitol Police, which you saw become famous, for lack of a better word, with the insurrection, as they want to try to put it, for January 6th. Now, the U.S. Capitol Police, you will notice in that particular case, have done the directive of the Speaker of the House. They failed to turn over 1,400,000 hours of video. They have locked people without due process and imprisoned them for over a year, without charges, locked them up for over a year. We can go on and on and on. There's a lot to talk about there. But the U.S. Capitol Police obviously do the bidding of the Speaker of the House. Now, by statutory executive order, which they were established, their sole purpose is to protect the House, that one, two blocks in D.C., and its members therein. That's all they're doing. When they're not members in their districts, but when they're in that 2-block radius. Yet they have a $625 million budget, one of the biggest budgets in law enforcement in the country. And the speaker put in and was awarded. They're now opening offices in Miami. I can give you a whole list all across the country.
Where else besides, right? I saw that about Miami. Where else are they, have they opened up offices?
Midwest, California. Last time I checked, Bill, I don't think we have a U.S. Capitol complex in Miami or in the Midwest or in the upper New York or anywhere on the California on the West Coast. So explain to me why we need to create offices with facilities and full staffing unless we're creating a national police force that will do the bidding, not of just an administration, but a bidding of a Congress that they were hoping was going to be a Democratic leftist leaning Congress for years to come.
Right. Okay. Okay. To me, it's really suspicious. There's no reason under the sun why there should be an office of the DC police in Cincinnati or Miami or any city for that. It's just insane.
It's insane. It makes
it's one thing. It's one. No sense. Yeah, it's one thing if members of Washington D.C. Capitol Police law enforcement go to a conference in Miami or in Cincinnati or in Chicago or in L.A., no big deal. That's normal. They get police trade associations hold events and they get training, or maybe they give seminars about things, and fine. But we're talking about an office.
Yeah, we're talking about a permanent office. We're not talking about a hotel room. We're talking about a permanent, fully staffed office. And your listeners will chuckle when they hear me say this. You remember, the government doesn't do anything half-heartedly. So we're talking about nice offices. We're talking about major facilities in these locations. And they're permanent.
The expansion of the U.S. money supply in 2021 is unprecedented. In fact, in the past 12 months, 40% of the entire U.S. dollar supply since the beginning of the American Republic have been printed. That's right. This is absolutely unprecedented. This is reckless. This is foolhardy. And this tends to be inflationary. So what can you do? Hey, protect the value of your assets and of your dollars. That's why I like to bring up www.ourgoldguy.com. That's www.ourgoldguy.com. Ira Bershadsky is the man. He's the person that we've come to trust. He's got extremely competitive prices. He's extremely reliable. And he's somebody that many people on our platform have seen that he delivers consistently and reliably. So keep in mind a couple of important points. Precious metals have been around as a store of value since biblical times. Since the dot-com boom in 2000, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has gone up 2 times. Now, during the same period, gold has gone up 4.5 times. From 2016 to 2020, gold and the stock market both went up. Historically, when the stock market, the U.S. dollar, real estate, and similar asset classes have gone down in value, gold has gone up, preserving your capital. If a percentage of your portfolio is in gold, it may cushion the downside, and potentially you will recoup your portfolio value quicker. And during inflationary times, like now, gold has increased in value as an inflation hedge. So folks, check out www.ourgoldguy.com. And remember also, precious metals is not just gold, but also silver. That's an industrial commodity. Investors have invested in silver when they feel that there will be an economic expansion. There's a lot of demand for silver. So folks, go to ourgoldguy.com. It's very reliable, very competitive, and it's a great company. And tell them that Bill McIntosh sent you.
Let me ask you this, Michael. What have you seen from members of Congress or members of the Biden administration? If you've seen anything, let me know. Maybe not, but have they tipped their hand at all? Have they tipped their hand about what have they said?
Here's what's interesting. Here's what is, I mean, your listeners want to know, they're going to get the truth. Here's what's very scary. And I'm telling them things you got to add 2 and 2 together, and you'll find out that it does equal 4. The federal agencies charged with the protection and the safeguarding of the American citizen on the federal level have become politicized. You look at the FBI. You look at DOJ. You have, let's take it one time. You've got DOJ going after parents at school board meetings because they don't believe in a particular curriculum. They're being characterized as domestic terrorists.
You've got intelligence, counterintelligence, and our National Defense Forces with the Bureau. Suddenly, they can't catch intelligence except for on the people that they want it to be on. Hunter Biden's computer has been out there with more evidence than I think exists on anybody else in the world. They've done nothing with it, sat on it. But yet, somebody that they think walked on the wrong side of the sidewalk, like happened on January 6th, they're all over. They know where that person's at. They already got him behind bars, even if they've not been charged with anything. And we can go down the list and beginning to see now, it's coming out on a daily basis, the abuse that our judicial law enforcement on the federal level have stooped to against the American citizens. And that's scary.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's but okay. Have we seen then anybody in the Department of Homeland Security making any statements about this? Members of Congress and the Democrat Party.
What I would encourage your listeners to how to validate what we're saying is, if you'll notice, they have gotten to the point now where they don't care what you. They don't ask, and they don't tell you what they're doing. They don't add. They don't want your questions about what's going on with the Hunter Biden computer, because they're not going to give you any answers. They're not going to tell you anymore whether we are monitoring. You know, the issue that happened with the mass shooting over the weekend in Buffalo, California. Yeah. There was a manifesto. Sure. Now, I'm the first to say you don't know for sure that was his. Okay. But there definitely have been things posted over some period of time. We have an agency that is quote unquote supposedly charged with tracking terrorists, domestic terrorists, and vetting and knowing where these people are at. You're going to tell me they couldn't pick that up? You're going to tell me that all the terrorists that have crossed the southern border because it's open, we can't account for, we don't know where they're at? Yet we have the premier law enforcement agency in the world, and they can't seem to maintain that where people are at? This is not coincidental, Bill.
So let me ask you a question about this this person in Buffalo, New York. Actually, he's not from Buffalo, is he?
He's outside the town close by Buffalo.
Right. So anyway, and you know, he didn't fit the narrative, but they tried to make it fit the narrative. They assumed it fit the narrative. I mean, they talked about this guy as, you know, Peyton Gendron, 18-year-old white man. That's interesting. Okay. So then, you know, I'm going to look at Liberty Daily, which I like going to. It's a really good site. It's kind of like they basically did what Drudge used to do, but even more conservative than even when he was more conservative. And look at this. Mass murder in Buffalo previously threatened school shooting. Hospitalized for mental health evaluation, no follow-up from law enforcement. And so this guy also supposedly, showed himself to be more leftist than rightist, I think. Correct. Did you see that?
It is. And what's interesting is the edict that I just mentioned. You're the premier law enforcement country in the world, and you're going to tell me you don't have a beat on what's going on in this country? I don't buy it.
Sure. I mean, they have, I mean, they've got also something, you probably know this, but there are people that work with Facebook that among your followers are basically, they're like police. They're like, correct. You go down them, and at one time I was able to find them, and they're there. They got like a badge. I mean, not that they're real cops, although maybe they are, but basically they're there to kind of like police what you say and post, and what other people following you say and post. And look at this. Yeah, here's the bit of information they got from National File. This is off of the Liberty Daily website. Buffalo shooter described himself as left-wing trash conservatism. Interesting. The suspected shooter who was taken to custody described his political beliefs as mild, moderate, authoritarian left in a manifesto reportedly written by him leftist politicians and pundits have attempted to pin the shooting on numerous right-leaning figures, including President Trump and Fox News host Tucker Carlson. The suspected gunman, an 18-year-old male, reportedly posted his manifesto online prior to carrying out the attack. Leftist pundits and politicians have pointed to references to the Great Replacement in an effort to tie his attack to right-wing conservative movements. Far-left U.S. Representative Ayanna Pressley of the Squad called, quote, white supremacy and gun violence threats to all of our communities, end quotes, in a tweet condemning the attack. So, and by the way, I understand that not all the victims were black. I think there were two whites who were killed, right?
Correct. That is correct.
So, you know, if he had been really a white supremacist, what would he have done? Well, I suppose he would have said, wait, you, please move out of the way, sir. You're white. I don't want to do this to you. Goodness gracious.
You know, you're exactly right. And I think what is tragic about this situation is they're using it once again for a narrative that actually backfired on them. You say, why did it backfire? Because the narrative was, this proves that we need more gun control and people carrying concealed weapons don't work. They don't help at all. People are still going to get shot up. Make sure that we have harder gun control and keep anybody from owning a gun. Take away the guns that people have. That's what they're pushing right now in New York and other places. They're using this as an example. But actually, here's what common sense, I mean, you don't have to just take my word for it from all my years of experience. Here's what anybody can figure out. It's very simple. Gun control does not work. He had a legal XR-15, but he modified it. Now, we have to understand, I was telling this on another on Fox News earlier. You know, we have millions of retired veterans in this country. That's what this country has operated on. People that are willing to serve to help defend the liberties that they enjoy. Most people with any military training, firearm training, will know how to very easily modify a gun. So gun control, just flat out, let's just not beat around the bush. It does not work, period. The only thing it does is to keep law-abiding citizens from having the tools necessary to defend themselves. The
right.
Second
or
thing
respond.
This does, or respond. The second thing this does prove, contrary to the mainstream media's thing, is yes, we had a retired police officer who was a security guard. Now, unfortunately, he had no body on because he was a security guard. He wasn't still a cop. He drew his weapon and he fired. He did hit the assailant, okay? But the assailant had on body armor, so it didn't faze him. But the point I'm making is, of course, the assailant returned fire and killed the retired police officer. But had there been 50 people in there with drawn weapons, I don't think he would have gotten off another shot when he was first
hit
by the retired police officer. Because even though you got a vest on, you get hit, there's a 2-3 second delay because you're still feeling the blunt trauma. You're not dead because the bullet didn't go into you, but you're feeling the blunt trauma.
And how bad is it, Michael?
What's that?
How strong is the blunt trauma? So somebody pulls out a 9mm pistol and fires it into somebody's chest and they've got body armor on. How hard is it?
It depends on the size of the guy, okay? I've had officers that are so jacked up with adrenaline and big guys that they didn't realize they'd even been hit till after the fact. Then you have other people that are not used to it, that are smaller, and they get hit, it'll spin them around and knock them on the ground before they get back up. It just really depends on the physical structure of the person being hit. But giving this person credit, even people that are physically big and strong, there is it's a distraction. You know you've been hit, okay? Because you can hear it. You can feel it. It's like somebody hit you with a sledgehammer. And you step back for you step back for a second. So yeah, there is an interruption, the best word. And your mental capacity, your cognitive response. And that split second interruption is enough for everybody else that's standing around with their firearms drawn to finish the job. But the fact there was nobody else that had a firearm, so he was hit,
He was stunned, for lack of a better word. I think your listeners relate to that. He was stunned for a couple microseconds, and then he returned fire. And, of course, the other guy didn't have any ballistic protection, so his was effective. He took him out.
Yeah, so, sure, this is the thing that's important to keep in mind, that he took advantage of the fact that it was a gun-free zone, I guess, right? Which right. I think apparently he mentioned at some he point. Did. I don't know, in his manifesto. Right?
He did. He was looking for an area where he knew that there would be less likely of people being able to draw on him and would be at his mercy. So the point, it just drives home the point, gun control does not work, and causing people not to be able to carry does not benefit the safety of our communities. It does the opposite. So here's my proposal, Bill.
Yeah,
and this freaks out people because I just started this today. Tell you what, we've been doing gun control for 50 years. The definition of insanity is to do the same thing and expect a different result. So why don't we do this? Let's create open carry nationwide for 30 days, for the next 30 days. And let's not just open it up and wash our hands. Let's use every state law enforcement agency, every federal, every local law enforcement agency to go out and enforce and train our citizens, those who want to, how to use a firearm, and let's let them carry them. And let's see where in 30 days we stand on this violent spike increase of crime and see what happens. I'm willing to put my reputation on the line. I'm willing to bet that that is the only thing that's going to break this violent spiral of upward violent crime that's occurring across the country now. And it's getting worse every day. It's not getting better.
Sure. I mean, this, I imagine, I mean, I'm speculating now, of course, but, you know, you also have another issue, and that is that not only do you have areas designated as a gun-free zone, which means that people, if they do have a firearm, and New York State is supposedly a very bad state from the standpoint of respecting the Second Amendment.
Correct.
And not infringing upon it. But, you know, anybody's law-abiding, what do they do? Oh, it's a gun-free zone. Oh, yeah, I just know that here in New York, I can't take my pistol and bring it into the store. Concealed. Right. So what do? They leave it in the glove compartment, they go in without it, and then, you know, you can't, in the middle of a mass shooting, you can't just run out to your car and say, one second, please, let me get my pistol.
No, it doesn't work that way. You're right.
You know, so, and he took advantage of this. And you also have the issue of, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people in black neighborhoods, there's a very high crime rate among blacks. A lot of them have been disarmed.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way, this is the plain facts of the matter. And to think that this guy targeted a store where he knows that he's going to have a gun-free zone for him to open up on, drives home your point again about how foolish it is to restrict the right to bear arms. You know, so
here's what I'm telling people across the country, starting as of today, we've done quite a few shows, got quite a few more on the schedule for the next couple of days. America, it's time that we take our streets back. I'm willing to take the risk for 30 days. Heck, if we find out crime's even worse, it doesn't work, well then, you know, I had a bad idea, y'all can throw rotten tomatoes at me. But you've had your way for 50 years, and we have the worst crime in history. And continuing to spiral out of control. I mean, at this stage, we will be in full anarchy before long. The thin blue line will collapse. So we need to do something different. So how about having the moral courage and fortitude to say, okay, you know, Philadelphia is looking to do this. In fact, they've already, I'm pleased to announce, it appears that Philadelphia is taking a historic turn and are going to allow open carry in the city of Philadelphia for the next period of time. They haven't determined how long yet. They're going to take my proposal together. And okay. We're going to see what happens. But that's just one city. It needs to happen across the country because I don't want to see other people die in Buffalo, New York, in California, in a church where we just had a mass shooting. Nobody else needs to die because of stupidity.
So what are the points of that? Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
No. It is sheer stupidity to tell the American people they cannot defend themselves and they must live in fear and be subject to being victims of crime. It's just
well, so. What's what's the point of this program? So I guess you proposed that to the Philadelphia city government, or what exactly was the point of it?
Yes, but we're proposing that to not just Philadelphia. We're proposing that to every state and every local, every city, every state government, and let's see what happens. You know, right. We issue temporary executive orders all the time. Suspend. I'm not telling you to change your laws. Suspend your gun control laws for 30 days and allow for an emergency proviso. And hey, I'm a reasonable guy. You can't open carry unless you go to a class for an hour or two and know how to use it and know how to have a safety on it, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
We can put some kind of provision in there. But let's put armed people, to take care of themselves first, to take care of our first responders, because obviously we need backup second, and to take care of their communities third. And let's see what happens in 30 days. Bill, I have a belief they will revolutionize America, and we will become a nation once again of freedom, law, justice, and safety.
Right.
Can you imagine, Bill, on a different note,
what it will do on the foreign market when countries across the world understand that just about everybody in America is armed and they carry with them. Don't think that's a country I want to invade, do you?
Oh, sure. They look at the Ukraine, how that's going for Russia. And I don't know if everybody's allowed to have a weapon or not, but if the people really have a will to fight, and I think America does still, although it's waning, I think they're in for a heap of trouble if they try to invade. Although the thing is, they do it insidiously. They do it bit by bit, degree by degree, as the poor frog in the water gets warmer and warmer and more asleep, and before it's at some point he's just unable to react anymore. And I think I fear that we're heading towards that. You know, so
you're right.
So let me ask you about the church shooting in California. What are the details on that? What do you know? What do we know about that so far?
There was a church shooting. It appears to be a Presbyterian church. Foreign. When I say foreign,
Laguna Woods.
The congregation was Taiwanese, and an Asian gentleman came in. Begin to shoot up the place, kill the first person. But here's what's interesting. The Asian congregants, rather than cower and try to push somebody else out from underneath the bench so they could hide themselves, in mass turned on him and tackled him, tied him up with electrical ropes. So he killed one and injured four, but it could have been a whole lot different had they reacted the way most Americans would have reacted.
Sure, they reacted with force.
Force and fought back.
People need to learn how to do that.
They do. That's the point I'm making to your listeners as well. You know, we had a nice stretch, America. We thought we were living in peace, prosperity. Little did we know that we had a government that had not had that in mind for us, and we're working behind the scenes against our very own citizens and trying to destroy us. But that has been exposed now. And now we're at the point now to where we don't get that peace and prosperity for the next few days. We have to fight for what we want to keep. And America, you have a choice. Fight and keep it, sit back and lose it.
Absolutely. So, and it's amazing. The one of the heroes in that church was a pastor who hit the assailant on the head with a chair.
Correct.
I mean, how about that? And then the churchgoers go and they hogtie him. It's amazing. You know, see, the thing is that this guy, he's going in there all pumped up saying, hey, you know, I'm going to just slaughter people. And all of a sudden he finds himself shocked and surprised that somebody actually he upsets the apple cart on his beautiful little sick plans to kill people.
Same principle, Bill, that we talked about earlier in Buffalo. If criminals know that their victims are not victims, but they are defendants.
Yeah, though they get scared like hell, man. They just cannot stand, they cannot stomach that somebody fights back, you know? It's all powered by the bully wins mentality, right? So it's extremely important. And it's, does your organization do anything concerning instructing people how to respond to mass shootings? Have you done that at all, Michael? Have you thought about that? Maybe it'd be something new.
Environment.
You say. Yeah. In other words, when you give a talk, you know, a brief module on how to respond to a mass shooting event, which can happen. It's just going on so often. We have these things happening. But it'd be an interesting thing to be able to offer people, because that way, because the thing is, the people get empowered to say, I'm going to do a fundraiser to buy a bulletproof vest for members of law enforcement, active or retired maybe, that are still working, defending the public in my municipality. And, I can do some sort of a car wash or some sort of an event, a bake sale, or find a way to a talent night. And, you know, people pay somebody so much money to sing a song or something like that. And then while they're at it, they can also learn how to respond to active shooter situations, which happen, sadly, you know, could be a couple of times a week in the United States. I don't know how often it's happening.
Used to be rare, and now it's becoming almost a couple of times a week. It's going to get to be daily for too much longer at the rate we're going.
Yeah, it's a really, really bad situation that's getting to be chronic.
Correct.
You know, so and it's going. I mean, we've got so much, like, not just mental illness. We've got something beyond that. We have moral illness.
Correct.
At play here. People that just have absolutely no qualms whatsoever about slaughtering people, innocent people, whether it's a knockout game or settling a score because, you know, I wasn't invited to a party or somebody made a comment or, you know, whatever it might be, or, you know, we're in a situation of moral collapse that's ongoing in our country, you know?
Very, very true. Very, very accurate.
So, Michael, let me ask you, what have you done recently regarding the VEST program? Anything new to report on that? Have you been maybe too tired with the media? What have you been up to?
Well, let me tell you, we are still, besides all the everything else we're involved with, from the People's Convoy to fighting the mandates that are hurting our first responders in the performance of their duty, we are still making sure that all those who are on the front lines are getting the active shooter vest that they need. And we're fighting an administration that's doing everything they can to thwart what we're trying to do, and to try to do the opposite. What do I mean by that? We're still down on the southern border, handing out active shooter vests on the southern border. We continually go down there because the need is so great. They are firing 50 calibers, the drug cartels across the river, tracers. They're not trying to kill our guys now with 50 calibers. I'm not saying that won't happen down the road. They're just trying to send a little intimidation factor. We have cells coming across every day that we know are not just drug cartel cells or human trafficking cells. We know are terrorist cells. We know this for a fact. Yet this administration refuses to vet them, refuses to expel them, and they move them around the country on the premise that they will process their request, which has always been bogus, down the road while they're in a different neighborhood throughout the country. And then they refuse to keep track of them. They give them a free phone that you and I pay for and say, oh, by the way, check in with us in about a month and we'll see, you know, what your status is. Well, they walk out the door laughing. They're not coming back.
Oh, that's a joke, man.
And then you have federal agencies, you and I talked about this a minute ago, that instead of doing what they're charged to do, are being politicized and weaponized to go after the law-abiding American citizen. We're headed towards that well-planned-out strategy of eliminating local and state law enforcement. And why do we need a federal force? Because, quite frankly, the only way to control your citizens most effectively is to not be able to let them to resist.
Right, it's hard not to have to check.
don't have a gun.
Yeah, go ahead. But
it's
exactly,
hard to resist without a gun.
Yep. And not only that, it's hard to resist without having checks and balances that
correct.
Basically are an institutional governmental resistance to, federal bureaucracy and a federal government that seeks to encroach upon rights that are established in the Bill of Rights. They make it so hard to do it by way of having a state, local, county law enforcement. That right. That means that, hey, sorry, DC is, that's your purview. That's your bailiwick. Don't go beyond that. Sure, you have BATF, you have the DEA.
Right.
You have the FBI, but they're restricted.
Interesting, Bill. Our country was never founded that way. We were founded. Go back in history. We were a states' rights country. We established a federal government for a good cause because you had to have a federal or one army. You didn't want to have different states having different armies. You want to have one centralized military that would fight abroad, not on our soil. So we established a federal agency. I'm not saying there's not a role for it. But we went from there to suddenly decided we don't want to have state agencies anymore because that controls too close to the people. Let's get rid of them all and make it a federal so we can control and become a dictatorship.
Who's the worst proponent of that you've seen on the national scene?
I think it's the current administration. It's a toss-up between the Biden administration and the Obama administration.
Sure. So, and what worries me is the Supreme Court, they want it to be as left as possible. And insofar as we go with more and more time with Joe Biden in office, that means there's a greater likelihood that Clarence Thomas will retire, Samuel Alito will retire, correct. Others as well. And then what are we going to have? We're going to have people that are going to be basically rubber stamping, something whereby we have federal involvement in local law enforcement on a constant basis, where they have to vet whatever they do to a bureaucrat in Washington. Very disturbing, and constitutes basically the death knell to the states' rights that are a fundamental part of the success of the American experiment. So,
Abraham Lincoln said it best: "We will never be defeated from without; we will only be defeated from within." And it's proving itself more accurate as the hours pass.
Absolutely. Well, good. Well, Michael, thank you so much. Michael Letts, www.investusa.org. Thanks for being on the Bill McIntosh Show. Look forward to having you on again, Michael, and Godspeed to you and to InvestUSA and your great
Godspeed
program.
Godspeed to you, Bill. Thank you for what you're doing, and God bless America. Take care.
Amen. God bless America. Thank you, Michael.